It was July in Chicago. The night air was thick and damp. I went into the Pulteney building and pushed the elevator button. No response. I shoved open the stairwell door, climbed to the fourth floor, and moved down the badly lit hallway to the east end, the end where rents are cheaper. In the dim light, I could read the inscription on the door. V. I. Warshawski, private investigator. I had called my answering service on my way home and was told I had a caller. A guy was coming at 9:15, and if my checking account hadn't been so damned anemic, I'd have ignored the phone call. My office looked Spartan, but not unpleasant. I'd bought the desk at a police auction. The Olivetti portable had been my mother's, as well as a reproduction of the Uffizi, hanging over the filing cabinet. That was supposed to make visitors realize that mine was a high-class operation. I switched the air conditioner on to high, and the room went dark. I'd blown a fuse. I made my way down to the basement, where a naked bulb lit a padlock on the supply room door. I started back upstairs with even less enthusiasm than before. I could hear a heavy tread ahead of me and guessed it was my visitor. I watched him in the dim light. When he got no answer to his knocking, he went inside and closed the door. As I opened the door, I saw my visitor whirl round. A sign from Arnie's steak joint flashed red and yellow across the street, providing spasms of light to my office. "I'm looking for V.I. Warshawski," he said. "Yes," I said, going past him to sit behind my desk. "I'm V.I. Warshawski. You call my answering service for an appointment?"
"Yeah," he said. "Why the hell doesn't the elevator work?"
"The tenants in this building are fitness nuts. Climbing stairs is a precaution against heart attacks."
"I didn't come here to listen to a comedian. Why is it so dark?"
"A fuse blew. We can go over to Arnie's steak joint if you want some light. You got a name?" He pulled out a card. I held it up to read in the flashing light from Arnie's. "John L. Thayer, Executive Vice President, Fort Dearborn Bank and Trust." John Thayer was a very big name at Chicago's biggest bank. "Hot diggity," I thought. "Play this fish right, Vic. Here come Durant." "Yes, Mr. Thayer. Now what seems to be the problem?"
"Well..." He stopped. "You know, I don't mean any offense, but you got a partner?"
"No, Mr. Thayer," I said evenly, "I don't have a partner."
"Well, this really isn't a job for a girl to take on alone."
My voice was husky with anger. "I skipped dinner to meet you. You want some references, ask for them, but don't waste my time. I can look out for myself. If things get heavy, that's my problem, not yours." He thought some more, then said,
"Anything I tell you has to be strictly in confidence."
"Righto, Mr. Thayer," I said wearily. "Just you, me, and Arnie steak joint."
"It's really Anita, my son's girlfriend. Ever since Pete, my son that is, got mixed up with her, he's been having some peculiar ideas."
"I'm afraid I only detect things, Mr. Thayer. I can't do much about what the boy thinks."
"No, no. It's just that they've been living together in some commune. They're political science students at the University of Chicago. Pete's taken to talking about becoming a union organizer and not going on to business school. So I went down to talk to the girl."
"What's her last name, Mr. Thayer?"
"Hill. Anita Hill. Anyway, I went down and right after that she disappeared. Now Pete's threatening to drop out of sight unless she turns up again."
"And were you responsible for her disappearance?"
"Me? If I was, I'd be able to get her back."
"Not necessarily. She could have squeezed 50 grand out of you and gone off on her own. Or you may have killed her or caused her to be killed. A guy like you has a lot of resources." He seemed to laugh.
"Yeah, I suppose all that could be true. Anyway, I want you to find her."
"Mr. Thayer, I don't like to turn down work, but why not get the police?"
"I don't feel like advertising my family problems to the police,"
he said heavily. "I see. Well, Mr. Thayer, I charge $125 a day plus expenses, and I need a $500 deposit. I'll also need your son's address and a picture of the girl." He gave it to me. 5462 South Harper and a picture of Anita Hill and asked me to call him at home to report progress. I jotted his home number on the card. He gave me $500 bills. Then he got up to go and I walked out with him. Under the stairwell lighting, his face appeared rugged. His suit was expensive, but he looked more as if he'd stepped from an Edward G. Robinson movie than the nation's eighth largest bank. I woke up to a day that promised to be as steamy as the one before. Over coffee and smoked herring, I tried to decide how to approach Peter Thayer about his missing girlfriend. I stacked my dishes and eyed them thoughtfully. One more day and I'd have to wash them. I put on jeans and a yellow top. Yellow suits me. I've inherited my Italian mother's olive coloring. She had hoped I would be a singer and wouldn't have liked my being a detective. Nor would my father. He'd been a policeman, Polish in an Irish world. I hadn't been on campus in 10 years. I stopped at a phone to call the registrar. I'm trying to locate one of your students, a Miss Anita Hill. A voice told me they had no student by that name. I asked for Peter Thayer and was surprised when she gave me the Harper address. If Anita didn't exist, why should the boy? I thought I should see if anyone was home. Number 5462 South Harper was a three-story building. The entryway smelled musty. The names on the bell panel had been taped to the wall. Thayer, Byrne, Steiner, McGraw, and Harada occupied a third-floor apartment. No Hill. I rang the bell and waited. No response. The inside door's lock was missing, so I climbed to the third floor. Hammered on the apartment door. No answer. Pulled a collection of keys from my pocket and found one that turned the lock. A small hallway opened onto a living room sparsely furnished with pillows on the bare floor and a stereo system. I could smell something rank, like stale garbage or a dead mouse. The hall ended in a kitchen. The smell was strongest there, but it took me a minute to see its source. A young man slumped over the table, his body in the early stages of decomposition. I lifted the boy's shoulders. A small hole had been put in his forehead. His face wasn't damaged. The back of his head was a mess. Something told me I was looking at the remains of Peter Thayer. I knew I ought to call the cops, but I might never have another chance to look over the apartment. There were three bedrooms. One of them belonged to the dead boy and a girl named Anita McGraw. Her name was scrawled across the flyleaves of numerous books. On the desk was an unframed photo of the dead boy and a girl. The girl had auburn hair and a vitality that made the photo seem almost alive. I found a couple of pay stubs made out to Peter Thayer from the Ajax Insurance Company. Clearly, the boy had had a summer job. Wedged behind them was a registration card with a Winnetka address on it. I took that and the pay stubs and the photograph. Outside, I walked back to the shopping center and called the police. My dad had been dead for 10 years, but I still knew the number by heart.
Homicide, growled a voice.
There's a dead body at 5462 South Harper, Apartment 3.
Who is this?
I hung up. I made it home in 20 minutes and took a shower. I put on white linen slacks and a black silk shirt. Then I headed back downtown to my office, ensconced my evidence in my wall safe, and tried the number Thayer had given me. A woman's voice answered, "The number you have dialed is not in service. Please check the number and dial again." Now I was certain that my last night's visitor was not John Thayer. Who was he then? And why had he wanted me to find that body? I walked to the Fort Dearborn Trust and asked for the annual report. John L. Thayer was pictured on the inside cover, and he bore no resemblance to last night's visitor. I pulled on my lip. Ajax Insurance, where presumably the boy had worked, had its headquarters not far from where I was now. It was 3 p.m. Not too late for business calls. Ajax occupied 60 floors of a skyscraper. I told the guard I had an appointment with Peter Thayer. "I'm a detective," I said crisply. The guard called up. The news that Mr. Thayer wasn't in today didn't surprise me. Mr. Masters, the claim department vice president, would see me, however. Masters had an office big enough for the bears to work out in.
Hold my calls, Ellen, he said to the secretary.
I gave him my card.
Now, what was it you wanted, Miss,
He smiled patronizingly. Warshawski, I'd like to know why Peter Thayer felt he needed a private detective.
I really couldn't tell you that, Miss,
He looked at the card.
What does the V stand for?
My first name, Mr. Masters. Maybe you can tell me what Peter Thayer does here. Masters obliged.
Jack Thayer is a good friend of mine, and when his son needed summer work, I was glad to help out. This job was to give him a better picture of the business world from the inside.
Why did you decide to see me? I asked.
Oh, when a detective comes around, it sounds kind of serious. Although maybe we could hire you to find out where Peter's gone. He hasn't been in all week. I haven't told Jack yet.
He ushered me back to the elevator. I rode down. Then I rode back up and strolled down the hall. I'd like to see where young Thayer sits, I told Master's secretary. She looked unhappy, but took me over to Thayer's desk. The papers were innocuous. Workers' compensation case estimates, correspondence to Ajax claim handlers.
You're certainly a lot more decorative than young Thayer.
The speaker was a man in his 30s who didn't have to be told how good-looking he was.
Has the kid omitted taxes or absconded with claim department funds and made them over to the Revolutionary Committee?
Do you know him? I asked.
Better than most people around here.
He grinned cheerfully.
He did legwork for Yardley. Yardley Masters. You were just seen talking to him. I'm Yardley's budget manager.
How about a drink? I suggested. He grinned again.
You've got a date, little lady.